Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill, only on LA Talk Radio.
Happy Monday, everybody, and thank you so much for tuning in to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill. Before we get started with today's show, we want to take a moment and thank our sponsors, the folks over at Markham Search LLC, who make this show possible. Markham Search offers premier professional recruiting services around the United States and internationally, with their corporate headquarters in New York and servicing most of the California area as well. So a special thank you to our sponsors over at Markham Search. And today we have with us on the show, Emma Swan serves as the Vice President of Leadership and Transformation at Healthy Companies International. MSA helps organizations navigate change by coaching executives to optimize their performance and guiding teams to build more productive relationships. Trained in organizational psychology, Emma Kate has led global leadership development initiatives focused on high potential employees. She holds a master's in organizational psychology from the University of New South Wales, as well as a bachelor's degree in psychology from the Macquarie University. Thanks so much for joining us.
It's great to be here with you, Jennifer.
Yeah, it's such a pleasure. So tell me a little bit about this idea of conscious leadership. When was it that you began to explore this and decide that this was your passion?
Yes, well, during my younger years when I was at university, originally I thought I actually wanted to go into clinical psychology. I was just always interested in the psychology of human behavior. And then my first job out of university was actually doing some technical training in a call center. And then I quickly moved into management training. But the one thing that I felt that I noticed was that often the skills we trained wouldn't always create real behavior change. And what I learned really was that what was missing was that we were focusing very much on skills and competencies, but we weren't focusing on, you know, people from the inside out. It was very much the outside in. And so that's where I really discovered that my work with leaders was much more satisfying and also much more effective when I worked with them both from a skills perspective and also looking at their mindsets and their beliefs and their emotions and those things that actually drove and changed their behaviors. So that's where my passion for conscious, becoming more conscious, really started.
And why do you think it's important? Why in today's society? I mean, so many of us could go through day-to-day life and we could just kind of live our lives and do the things that people do. What does consciousness have to do with it?
Yeah, absolutely. We define being conscious is awareness in action. And what that means is it's really a level of consciousness at three levels. One is being aware of ourselves. So understanding our own beliefs, our own emotions, and how they impact our actions. The second level is being aware of our relationships. So if you think about a job interview, how are you showing up in that interview? How are you building rapport with your interviewer? How are your emotions impacting your interviewer? And then at the third level is being aware of your environment. So that's understanding both the organizational forces as well as the external forces that impact you and that you need to learn to adapt to. So the reason that it's so important in today's world is that the world is really changing faster than our ability to adapt, and the pace of change is only continuing to increase. So people are feeling overwhelmed. You know, if you think about the increase in technology and the level of complexity, and what happens is that people then become resistant to change. And so our ability to adapt is more important than ever before. And what we've found is that as people become more conscious, they're able to better adapt, and then they also perform at the highest level. And this is a really key skill if you're thinking about identifying and moving towards your dream job and managing your own career.
Okay, got it. So it sounds like what you're saying is that, would you say, well, here's a funny trick question. Mm-hmm. How many of our leaders in today's society do you think are aware of their consciousness?
Yeah, well, thank you for asking that. Actually, it's an interesting question. And we went about that at Healthy Companies. We actually conducted a Harris poll with over 2,000 working adults over 18 years of age to understand, firstly, how Americans view leaders and their ability to navigate in a rapidly changing world. And what we found was that more than half felt that their leaders were not adapting well. And then secondly, to address directly your question, a strong majority of Americans believe conscious leaders can vastly improve their organizations, but found that only half believe that their executives are truly conscious. So this was a really interesting piece of data that we learned.
Yeah, it's funny. I'm sure you're familiar with it from a psychological standpoint. There was some research I was doing recently for a talk I was doing, and it involved, you know, people who might be an asshole, part of my French at work. And one of the things that surprised me statistically was the dark triad, which is, I believe it's narcissism, psychopathy, and Machiavellianism, that it's like 1% of the world's population exhibits that, but 3 to 20% of the world's CEOs exhibit some sort of dark triad personality trait, which I thought was an interesting thing, given that's 20% of our world leaders.
Yeah, absolutely. And we've learned that as people do actually go up in the ranks, they're further away from the people, and that level of awareness is so much more important. So yeah, it's really important that people focus on becoming more conscious.
So talk to me about that. How can somebody work on becoming more conscious? It seems like it's this esoteric, somewhere out there woo-woo concept. No offense.
Right.
I believe
yeah,
it.
No problem.
But for people
Absolutely.
Out there who might be wondering.
Absolutely. So we've defined four key practices that people need in order to become more conscious. And this is based on our work with over 500 executives across 50 countries. It applies to leaders, but also individual contributors. So the first practice is called going deep. And this is about helping you discover your inner self. So really understanding what really matters to you and what drives your behavior. The second practice is called thinking big. And this is about dealing with the complexity in which we're having to operate. And it's the skill in being able to see a world of possibilities. The third practice is about getting real. And this is about getting real and intentional with ourselves. So it's really about how do we become our own change agent and constantly reinvent ourselves in a constantly changing world. And the fourth practice is about stepping up. And this is about being bold and responsible and accountable. So it's about stepping into your highest potential.
So let's start with step number one, or practice rather, number one,
sure.
About going deep. So we all have this idea of going deep. It means when you sit down with your journal and you reflect, mm-hmm. listening to sad music or you meditate or whatever that means. Mm-hmm. What does going deep mean to you from a practice standpoint?
Yeah, absolutely. Going deep is very much about introspection. It's really about becoming more self-aware. And if you think about it in the context of managing your own career and finding your dream job, it's thinking about what really matters to me. It's about identifying the values that are going to be really important in our next career. It's about identifying our strengths and development. And it's about also understanding some of those inner stories, beliefs, emotions that can actually get in the way. So we believe in Healthy Companies that as the world is changing more on the outside, we need to do that deeper work of introspection. And it's not something that we naturally do. We tend to be sort of have a bias for action, if you like. But otherwise, we really get thrown away by the winds of change. And what happens is that we're much more reactive rather than proactively managing our own career from the inside out.
Yeah, it's funny. I'm going to tie something in here that I just happened to hear last week from one of my mentors and teachers. And it's sort of, it relates in a way when you're talking about how do we like up-level our career? I know many people out there listening, or many people, you know, who might be out there in the world right now might be in a place where they think, well, geez, what am I doing wrong? Why don't mm-hmm. I have my ideal partner? Why don't I have my ideal job?
Mm-hmm.
What's wrong? What's missing? And I had never heard this before. And my teacher last week said, in life, the only thing, and this is just his philosophy, that we have control over, that we have free will around, is the moments where we experience great pain, suffering, or loss.
Mm-hmm.
In those moments that we experience that, to go against our very nature, that nature to be reactive, that fight or flight, that survival mode. And in those moments when, you know, say we do get fired from a job, or we break up with a significant other, or we go through a traumatic change in our life, it's in those moments where if we don't react, and if we become, as you said, self-aware, and you become deep, and you pause before you react, or you choose a different way of being, that mm-hmm. you have, in my teacher's words, a way to up-level your destiny, which I just absolutely love that, is it's in those moments where we're really struggling that you can completely redirect your career, your relationships, whatever that might be.
Yeah, absolutely. And I love that framing too. And one of the things that we talk about in Going Deep is about traveling light. We use this metaphor of traveling light. And to the point that you made, Jennifer, it's about understanding out some of our attachments. And in those moments that you talked about, you know, where we have these conversations with ourselves that really keep us stuck in some of those old patterns. And one of the key attachments that we have, and as we think about managing our career and finding our dream job, is an attachment to stability. So we try and believe that we can create safety and stability in our lives when we know that there is no such thing, that, you know, we often say that stability is an illusion. So we either stay in, you know, the current job we're in, or we avoid stepping out of our comfort zone. And so one of the things that we talk about in Conscious, our book, is that we need to build awareness of what our attachments are. And if you think about this attachment to stability, and we need to get comfortable being uncomfortable. And a lot of that is embracing our own vulnerability, if you like. So we very much talk about that in the book, and actually seeing those, as you said, as opportunities for growth.
Yeah, and it's funny because as a human being, I feel like we just cling to it, whether it's a job that somebody's had for 10 or 20 years, or a marriage, or anything mm-hmm. that, or a friend or a family member. I feel like, to your point, it makes us feel safe. And if that person or that job or that thing is missing, then all of a sudden we feel lost at sea and just catapulted into chaos. And we don't understand that there's actually a design beneath all the chaos and disorder. And that if we can actually, it's all about perspective. It's like that old Chinese symbol that says, what is it? Opportunity, or is it opportunity or fear? There's some Chinese character that means the exact same thing, and it can mm-hmm. either be interpreted as opportunity or fear. I think I might be getting that wrong.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think one of the things that we do is that we find ourselves trying to control things that are out of our control. And, you know, we call this ceaseless striving. So one of the things people can simply do, it's not simple, but to really be conscious of doing, right, is to distinguish what you can and can't control. And just being gentle with yourself and taking small steps and keeping your eye on the future can help.
I'm sorry, I don't think I heard you right, Emma-Kate, because I'm pretty sure you just said that there were things that were outside of my control.
Yeah, so identifying what you can and what you can't control. Yeah.
And it's great. And I think a lot of the 12-step programs and other things focus on that, because you can literally drive yourself mad trying to control things that we have no business controlling. It could be your
yes.
boss. I know so many people who suffer because they have a boss or a colleague who's a jerk or is mean or does that. And they think, well, if only that person would change, or if only this thing would change, then I could be happy. And what they don't realize is, the rest of their lives, there's always going to be that person or that thing or that situation.
Mm-hmm.
And that the only thing that they really legitimately have control over is their response and their perspective about that situation.
Yeah. And you summed it up so beautifully, because that's really what Going Deep is all about. It's actually starting with ourself and understanding, you know, some of our own emotions, some of our own beliefs that can get in our way. So that's sort of the first practice, if you like, in becoming more conscious.
So now that we understand, okay, so we let go of our attachments, we look at the things we can and can't control. Now, how do we begin to think big? What does that look like?
Yeah. And thinking big is really just seeing a world of possibilities. So seeing bigger opportunities for yourself. And we sometimes talk about believe it before you see it, rather than see it to believe it, if you like. So one of the things that we can do in order to think big is to think about developing our personal ecosystem. So if you think about, you know, what's your greatest asset, if you like, in finding your next career, we believe that it's your personal ecosystem. So really who you know and how you connect to people in your personal ecosystem. And so, you know, one of the things that people can simply do is think about, firstly, how are they leveraging their own network? And, you know, we often think about building new connections, which is absolutely important, but our network is all around us. So if you think about just your book club or your sporting team or your children's, you know, sporting team and their parents that are involved, how are you actually using your network to find new connections and opportunities? So that would be sort of one aspect of thinking big. And the other one, in terms of building your own ecosystem, is thinking about yourself as a brand. So if you think about managing your career as if you're a startup, like entrepreneurs, we need to invest in ourselves and take our own product to market. So one of the things is thinking about what's the brand that you're putting out in the market for yourself, and are you thinking big as you identify your brand, and are you communicating your brand, so your passions and your values and your strengths, and then obviously leveraging social media to help you do that.
Yeah, I think that's something that a lot of people I've met in the last 10 years that I've been recruiting have resisted, is this whole concept of seeing yourself as a brand and mm-hmm. understanding that everything you do, whether you're downstairs at Starbucks getting a coffee, there was somebody, it was so funny, somebody I knew recently, her husband was on his way into the office and somebody was just like going really, really slow. And so he started honking and like, oh, you're crazy. Why are you not going faster? Mm-hmm. And then lo and behold, it turned out it was the general manager of his company who pulled him in for an
interview.
You just never know.
Absolutely.
Where your brand extends, not just to within the walls of your office, but to how you treat a waiter who might one day work for you. I know all those things tie in.
Yeah, absolutely. Totally agree.
And so let's talk about being real or getting real.
Mm-hmm.
This is practice three. So we've gone into deep and thinking big. What does getting real mean in the context of consciousness?
Yeah. So getting real is, at a sort of simplest level, is about being honest and intentional with yourself. And it's really about learning how to transform and reinvent yourself. So if you think about sort of operating in a constantly changing world, we need to be reinventing ourselves. And it's looking at those things that push us forward to help us step into our highest potential and those things that hold us back. So one of the things that we talk about in getting real is how you create personal transformation or personal change. And we talk about this whole concept of that change and transformation happens in the gap between your current reality and your desired future. So if you think about, you know, when you're looking for your next job, or you're forced to look for your next job due to circumstances, that you're in this gap, you can either be pushed into it or you can be pulled into it when you might be seizing your opportunities or looking for a more desirable career. So in the gap is where we experience anxiety and discomfort, but it's also where we also create change and transformation for ourselves. And I think even this word transformation can throw people because it's such a big word, but often these incremental changes can be transformational. And what we've found is that the most conscious people are effective at navigating that gap between their current and their desired state. And the biggest challenge in today's accelerating and disruptive world is that this gap is widening. And so people need to change and transform themselves more quickly than ever before. Now, one of the ways that we talk about in terms of how you do this is by leveraging your accelerators, which are those things that push you forward, your mindsets, beliefs, and emotions and actions that push you forward, and managing your personal hijackers, which are the opposite, if you like. And if I just give you an example, so some examples of personal accelerators are things like confidence, courage, resilience, your generosity, optimism, discipline, and practice. And On the other end, your personal hijackers are things like being overly controlling, cynical, self-critical, over-pleasing, right? We've all been there and we all have all of these. So this is, you know, very normal. And if you think about a powerful story of someone like Michael Phelps, right? He absolutely leveraged his accelerators. And he also had to manage his hijackers at a point in his life. So, you know, he was discovered at 11 by his coach and was the youngest male swimmer in the Sydney Olympics at 15. And then if, you know, and most people know his story, in 2004 in Athens, he won 6 gold and 2 bronze. He went on to continue to work to win all these medals. But then at a certain point, his life spiraled down. And this was really a result of what we refer to in conscious as his personal hijackers. So, you know, if you remember some of the drug and alcohol challenges he had, multiple DUIs, broken relationships. He was even suspended from swimming. And what he learned was that he had to go to a treatment center and really do some deep work. But he learned that some of his hijackers, which were also his accelerators, but it's when we overuse them, they can get in your way. And if you think about some of his hijackers, he mentions are his fixation on success and his perfectionism. And so he really had to look deeply at these and how they were showing up. And, you know, we know that there's a positive ending to this story because he then returned in Rio in 2016, winning 5 gold and 1 silver, and was really the poster child for accelerators, right? His drive and his desire and his practice. So sort of the message of this story is that all of us have our accelerators, and even Olympians like Michael Phelps, we have hijackers, but it's building awareness of what these are and then learning how we can manage those hijackers and how we can leverage those accelerators. Does that make sense?
It does. And I want to stay with you on this topic for a minute about managing the hijackers, because mm-hmm. I know for a lot of us, you know, you might be self-aware. Certain people might go home and they might say, okay, I drink too much, or I play too many video games, or I gamble too much, or, you know, I'm too controlling of my spouse or my employees. Mm-hmm. But one thing, it's kind of like that old adage of, you know, we all know how to lose weight, diet, and exercise, but right. No, it doesn't make a difference.
Yes.
So the question then becomes, how do you take it from a level of acknowledging that, okay, I have these hijackers, you're Michael Phelps, you realize you become overemphasizing or you become too hyper-focused on perfectionism. Mm-hmm. But when you're in that gap or in that space, where does it become transformed, in your words, into something that again goes from being a hijacker to an accelerator? Where is the wisdom? Like, what wisdom, yes, aside from the knowing, can people connect to around that?
Yeah, I love that question. Thank you. And actually, it goes back to one of the points that you made before where, you know, some of the most challenging moments is where the most growth is. But one of the things that we would say in order to manage your hijackers is that you need to learn to manage your threat response. So our brains are wired to perceive threat. A part of our brain called the amygdala perceives threat, and it could be just, you know, you're in that sales meeting and you share the sales figures and they're not as good as they should be, and your boss frowns at you, and all of a sudden you are triggered, right? You're in your hijackers, and your boss might be in his hijackers as well, and that actually feeds off each other. So what we need to do is we need to learn to get really present, and some of the techniques we can use, and, you know, there's a lot of talk about this, you know, now, you know, like things like mindfulness and meditation, but in that moment, so firstly, you want to practice a daily practice like mindfulness or meditation or yoga. Then that helps manage the amygdala. And actually, there's some research to show it even makes the amygdala smaller, so it's less reactive. Hmm. But then you need a strategy for in the moment, right? So you're in the meeting and your boss has frowned at you and you think, oh my God, is my job on the line? And I'm now in my hijackers. And the first thing you need to do, just from a biological standpoint, is that you need to take deep breaths in order to slow your threat response, which is either a fight, right? We want to sort of fight back, and it might be with just our nonverbals or our tone of voice, or we want to literally run out of the room, which is called flight. And then some people even have a freeze response. So what we need to do is, just like, you know, as if we're being attacked, we're in this fight or flight response, we actually need to get the blood back to our thinking brain, because when we have, we call it an amygdala hijack, our thinking brain, which tells us how to respond in an effective way, literally goes offline. So we're no longer able to leverage our most creative brain. So the first thing we need to do is, as you said, we need to find the pause, and we need to then breathe deeply. Now, what happens is we don't actually always have awareness that we're being triggered, because remember, our thinking brain's offline. And so one of the levels of awareness that most adults never learn is to actually pay attention to the signs and signals their body gives them. So if you think about public speaking, right, it's something that frightens a lot of people. You get sweaty people. Some people get sweaty palms. Their heart starts beating rapidly, etc. Each of us have a different way of responding in terms of our body when we have that threat response. And the first level of awareness, and this is part of going deep, actually, which helps what you're talking about, is actually starting to build awareness of what happens to us when we're having that threat response. Then we can pay attention to our body, because that's an early warning sign to say, I need to take a few deep breaths to slow this threat response, to allow my thinking brain the time it needs, because it's 80 milliseconds before our primitive brain is set off, and it takes up to 240 milliseconds before our thinking brain actually registers. Now, that's an issue, right? So we need to find the pause between that time, which is a very small amount of time, which is why paying attention to our body and the signs and signals our body gives us can actually help us take a few deep breaths, maybe have a glass of water if we need to, even a little longer, maybe ask a question to still get our thinking brain to switch back on before we then respond. Does that make sense, what I'm saying there?
Oh, yes. Where were you this morning when it was Monday morning and the fireworks? Because again, it's funny. I practice meditation every day, and I can't say it does make a difference. But the thing is, no matter how much work you do on yourself, we're still human beings. At the end of the day, we still are animals. And no matter how small your amygdala gets, it's still there. Yes. And so I think one of the things too that I find helpful personally is acknowledging yourself for those small victories. Mm-hmm. Or yes, maybe you were reactive one time, but maybe there were 9 other times during the day where you weren't reactive. And to go back to Michael Phelps' point, not to beat yourself up for the 1 out of 10 times that you were reactive, but really to cheer yourself on, be your own number one cheerleader and say, you know what, those other 9 times, or even if it was 1 time out of 10 that you didn't react, that's still a victory over human spirit, you know, as opposed to reacting 10 out of 10 times.
Yeah, and I love what you're saying, Jennifer, because that's about leveraging your accelerator of compassion, and it's self-compassion in this case. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the aspects that we talk about in becoming more conscious, is actually learning to be kind to ourselves, right? Because as you said, we are all human, and we are all going to have hijackers, and we also have accelerators, and sometimes we're going to have more stress, and that's where those hijackers will tend to show up more, and it'll be harder to find that pause and to take those few deep breaths.
Yeah. And one other thing I'd love to throw out there that I learned in a program, a transformational personal development class years ago, is the other thing is our bodies physiologically, aside from the amygdala, mm-hmm. we actually have the same physiological patterns when we get activated. So for some people, it depends on, it's an activated childhood thing for many people. Mm-hmm. When you get upset, you might cross your arms, you might clench your body or hold your breath. There's many different physical ways of being. And so one thing I was instructed to do years ago is to do something that is physiologically not known to your body. So for example, if you get really nervous in an interview or you're about to give a speech, it doesn't have to be a big thing, but you could touch the 2 tips of your index fingers together. And in doing that in that moment, it's created, you're a psychologist and a scientist, so you could probably say more about this than I could. But by doing that in that moment, doing something physiologically different than what you would normally do when you get stressed, aside from just regulating your breathing, it actually gives you access to new ways of being in those moments when you're very stressed.
I love that, Jennifer.
I can't take credit. It was a great program I did. There was actually, if you're not driving and you want to have a little giggle with yourself, years ago, somebody taught me something called the jellyfish. So for those of you listening out there, all right, Emma Kate, I invite you to do this. You take your wrist.
Okay.
And you touch your wrists together. And so your hands now kind of form a little jellyfish. And now you can wiggle your fingers. You can move your hands. You can do whatever you want. Please don't do this in an interview or public speaking or on a first date. You can do it at the table if you need to, but try to have an argument with somebody or be upset with somebody or tell somebody a story about where you were recently angry while holding your hands like this with your wrists touching and your fingers like wiggling. You cannot actually be mad and have the same argument or upset when you're physiologically doing something different. So that was something I learned years ago called
jumping. I love that.
Just a fun little thing.
That's fabulous. Absolutely. I'm going to try that.
Yeah, try it. It's such a fun thing. I have, when I do talks on this, I have people do an exercise where they yell and scream and talk about a person they were recently angry with. And then I have them try to have that same conversation while jellyfishing, and they just wind up feeling they can't. So.
I love the jellyfishing too. Yeah. I'm definitely going to borrow that.
It's an adjective. Take it, run with it. The more people you can help, the better. So let's talk about the fourth one, stepping up. So what does up mean? How do we bring this all together and get to that last step of consciousness?
Yes. And this is really about action. I mean, each of the steps is about action, but this is really where we need to take action. And it's about acting boldly and responsibly. And if we think about it from a career perspective, it's stepping into a bigger version of ourselves. And so one of the things that we talk about in stepping up is this whole idea of how do we energize ourselves and motivate ourselves. And it's this idea of operating with just enough anxiety. So we have reframed energy to talk about anxiety, and often the word anxiety is used in a negative context, but we actually see that anxiety is a source of energy that we can leverage within ourselves as well as our organization. So if you think of, for example, the metaphor of a rubber band, and if you don't do anything with a rubber band, what happens? Well, nothing, right? So it just sits there. And put in human terms, we would refer to this as too little anxiety. And when there's too little anxiety or energy, it leads to complacency, right? So we are just complacent. We stay in the job we're in, even if we're not happy. And we're not actually creating personal change or stepping up. And then on the other end of the spectrum, if you take a rubber band and put it on your wrist and then pull it out and let it snap, right? It's going to hurt. Of course. And we would say that because that, you know, the rubber band's released in the wrong way and it causes a negative outcome, it stings. In human terms, this is what we call too much anxiety. And too much anxiety is really where we have overwhelm or chaos. And so what we're looking for in terms of tapping into our own personal energy in a constructive way is to operate with just enough anxiety. And this then helps us really step into a bigger version of ourselves. So one of the ways that we talk about doing this is to think about, if you think about those sort of two ends, too much and too little, and we're wanting just enough, it's about this whole idea of operating and leveraging paradox. So if you think about sort of in a team and even within our own selves and some of our own personal growth, we tend to operate either on one end of a paradox or the other. So let's take a real common one. Confident humility, right? We are either often maybe too confident, and if we're too confident, it can be what? Egotistical, as you said, exactly. When you gave that percentage of leaders that are egotistical, narcissistic. And on the other end, if we're too humble, you know, we can show up that we don't have a strong point of view, people don't know where we stand, and they lose trust with us. So what we're wanting to do is we're wanting to operate with both confidence and humility. And this is a way that we can be operating with that just enough anxiety. So if you think about having the confidence in what you know and being open to learning from others and growing your capabilities as you think about your next career. The second paradox is about constructive impatience. So the same idea. We don't want to just focus on being constructive and we don't want to be overly impatient. So that's about being encouraging with yourself and stretching yourself out of your comfort zone if you think about developing your career and your skills. And then the third one I'll mention is about realistic optimism. And this is about being both flexible and focused on what you want. And these three key paradoxes, we believe, are really key in creating just enough anxiety and creating the change and the energy that we need in order to move forward.
I love that. So I think that was so brilliant that I'd love to just kind of recap if I got it right. Because it's funny, I used to do this years ago when I first started doing the show. I would go after the show and I'd be like, shoot, you know what? I really want to go back and listen to that. But I wouldn't take notes when a guest was speaking. But now I found as the host, I don't care. I'm sitting here taking notes just like
it's your show, Jennifer. You can do whatever you like.
I can do what I want. No, confident humility. Step one. But all kidding aside, I did write down notes on it because I like to make myself little notes about each show that I then put as a post-it or a meme or whatever it might look like. So if I wrote this down right, you have confident humility, constructive impatience,
yes,
and realistic optimism, right?
That's right. Yes.
Those are all brilliant. I could sit here and spend another hour or two talking to you just breaking down each one of those concepts. But I think those are great things just to kind of keep a little sticky note on your computer just to remind yourself of either the four different steps that we're talking about for deep thinking big, getting real, stepping up, or maybe even just having these as a meme on your phone, whatever it looks like, just to remind yourself in those moments when you get reactive or the amygdala takes over.
Yes, absolutely. And for me, I mean, I'm constantly reminding myself about that confident humility, right? I'm quite good at being humble, but sometimes I need to step into my confidence. And so, you know, we're all working on these all the time. So going back to your point, you know, we're human. This is sort of a lifelong journey, but we also have the ability to become more conscious and learn to adapt to the disruptive world we're operating in.
Yeah, and I'll tie it all together. It was funny, yesterday I was at one of my teachers, one of my spiritual organizations that I go to on Sundays, and the instructor there was saying something exactly along the lines of this, which he said, whatever we do in life, it's the consciousness with which we do it, married with the intention behind that consciousness. So, you know, if you're just kind of going into work every day and not having an intention to get that promotion or not having an intention to be confident humility, if we don't have that intention, then we might not be getting the promotion we want or be recognized by our peers because that thing is missing, just like you said, is that element of bringing that confidence that where you might be too humble. And then I love that it ties in the consciousness, you know, the consciousness with which we do anything. If we go into work every day and we go in with the consciousness of what a horrible, hard day it's going to be because it's a Monday and how are you going to make it to Friday, then that's the consciousness that's going to show up. It's like food. If you have ever eaten the food that somebody has cooked and you taste the love or the deliciousness in it, it's the same as true of your job, your relationship. It's the consciousness with which you do anything.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. And I think because our world is moving so quickly, we can just operate on autopilot. And so we're just so reactive. And I read some interesting research by a professor at the University of Virginia that was, and hopefully I'll get this data correct, but it was we're faced with about 40 million pieces of data in any moment, and we can only focus on 40 at once. So what are we paying attention to? And I think that sort of goes to your point around being intentional and just taking that time to pause and being conscious of our actions.
I love it. Emma Kate, we could talk all day long. You've given our listeners a lot of food for thought. I know I have pages upon pages of notes from our conversation and this interview. So were there any points or any questions I didn't get a chance to ask you that you would love everybody to take away from today's show?
I mean, I think sort of my final thought would just be that each of us has the ability to become more conscious and increase our ability to adapt and get more comfortable being uncomfortable and dealing with our uncertain world. And it's really, as you said, sort of going back to making an intentional choice. So the first deliberate choice we need to make is that we want to actually work on ourselves from the inside. And I just have an offer to finish off, which is we do have a short free survey on our website if anyone would like to do a little mini self-assessment, which is about how conscious are you, and on our website, which is healthycompanies.com. If you go to our resources section there, you'll find that, as well as our book, which obviously talks about these practices in a lot more detail.
I love it. I know what I'm going to be doing after the show. So it's healthycompanies.com, and people can go to the Resources Center and then find a little quiz on there to check in with their level of consciousness, right?
Absolutely.
Perfect. And go ahead and give the listeners one more time the book and let them know where they can find it aside from the website.
Okay, great. So our book is Conscious, The Power of Awareness in Business and Life by Bob Rosen and Emma Kate Swan, myself. You can find that on Amazon.com is probably the easiest way. We've also got it advertised on our website, and there's a link there that you can also purchase it directly at healthycompanies.com.
Perfect. Well, thank you so much, Emma Kate. It's been a pleasure having you on the show. I know I definitely learned a lot and have a lot of great takeaways from today. So it's been a pleasure. And looking forward to next week, we invite our listeners to tune in. We have Mark Lovett joining us. He is the storytelling expert who helps people do their first TED Talk. So we're excited to talk to Mark about how to tell a better story. And for those of you interested in what it might take to do your own TED Talk, we invite you to tune in next Monday at 4 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. If you missed any portion of today's show, as always, immediately following the show on the LA Talk Radio website, specifically on the Get Yourself the Job landing page, at the bottom in the archive section, you will find a download of today's show, as well as any prior shows that we've done over the last 2.5 years. And additionally, later in the week, the show is always available for download on iTunes under Get Yourself the Job on iTunes. We invite you to subscribe, listen at your leisure, leave us any comments or feedback. And thank you again for tuning in today. And thanks so much to Emma Kate for joining us.
Thanks so much, Jennifer. It's great to be here.
All right.
You're listening to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill, only on LA Talk Radio.